Y'all, welcome back to Her with Amina Brown. And I just want to give y'all a special shout out, all of my listeners. I am seeing y'all when I go into the back end of the podcast thing. I'm seeing y'all listening on here. So I just want you to know you are appreciated. And I want you to know that I am very excited about the guest we have in our Her living room today. I want to welcome singer-songwriter and half of rock and roll country soul duo, The War and Treaty. Let's welcome Tanya Trotter. Woo!
Yay! Woo! I'm so excited to be on this podcast with you today. I'm so excited.
Y'all, listen, let me tell y'all, first of all, I had the opportunity to meet Tanya and her husband. We were on the road together on the Together Live tour. Shout out to all of my Together Live folks that we got a chance to tour with in 2019. And I immediately struck up a conversation with Tanya and her husband talking about television. We just
And who knew we'd be doing this for the next 9 months, just watching series, watching TV.
Exactly. They were like giving me tips on like different shows they had watched. And then there was some shows we all watched and we talked about it. Like, we spent all the time before that show just talking TV. And of course, getting a chance to, one of the things that's a big plus of being on a tour like Together Live is that you are on stage while everyone performs. And those of us that are touring artists, that's not always the case, you know? So getting a chance to be on stage together and experience each other's performances, which is how I got a chance to hear Michael and Tanya Trotter do the thing. And if y'all haven't heard this music, y'all need to go do that. Don't go do it yet because we're about to talk. But after we talk... Y'all need to go do that because it is just, I mean, I've been in that room. We also had a chance to perform at Makers Conference, sharing stage together there. And just, it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Well, thank you. And we experienced you and you are incredible. I mean, there are, you know, people use words like cliche words, like incredible, phenomenal. She's so amazing. But you, I mean, just breathtaking. You know, we talk about it all the time, just how you're able to capture the audience with your words. And they're like holding on to every thing that comes out of your mouth. And, you know, I'm just so happy that we had an opportunity to experience you. And we all made that human connection that we made during that tour of time.
Yes, y'all. I'm telling y'all, when the pandemic is over, I don't know where The War and Treaty gonna be on tour, but I'm just gonna go there. Just uninvited. I'm gonna go there and be like, I'm sorry, I thought we was doing this together. It's not. I thought we was doing this together. I'm just gonna show up there because that's how I feel about it. So first of all, Tanya, I want you to know that The War and Treaty, as a duo, you all have fans. And individually, you all have fans as well, because I was telling a couple of people that I was interviewing you today and they were so excited. They were like, oh my gosh, yes, I want to hear everything. I want to know everything. So, Tanya, I want to talk about the duo of The War and Treaty, but can you tell us a little bit about your half of the duo? You have been singing, writing songs. You have also been involved in film. You just had a lot of different experiences in the entertainment industry. So this is what I want you to do. Start me out. And like, if you think of yourself when you were first entering the beginnings of the entertainment industry, did you expect entering it then what the music would become now?
I had no clue. I started out, in church, like most people, you know, singing on the choir. And my mom was from Panama. So in my household, it was gospel music. It was calypso music. It was classical music. And then being from Washington, D.C., it was go-go music. You know, it was all different, a plethora of music just flowing through my household and flowing through my church and my community. And I just knew that I wanted to do music. I knew that there was, once I heard my brother sing one Sunday morning, I think I was about 6 or 7 years old, I was like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. And I didn't know how I would do it or what avenues I would go about doing it. So I started doing talent shows and getting in pageants the Hal Jackson Talented Teen Pageant, which was really big, you know, in the 90s. And I won that pageant. Then I went to, you know, high school and studied music there and Duke Ellington School of the Arts. And from Duke Ellington School of the Arts, I went back to Potomac High School, where I ended up getting a scholarship to Morgan State University for vocal music.
Wow.
And in the process of doing that, I was at this time 17 years old, about to enter college. And I entered this talent contest. It was called Big Break. And the legendary, now late great, Natalie Cole was the host.
Wow.
And I performed on that show, and a record company saw me performing on that show, and they reached out to my school at the time. And they were like, we want to give you a contract. So I went to New York with my mom and ended up signing a contract with a company who was managing Melba Moore. These are people like I, you know, Pearlie, wow. Melba Moore, you know, yeah. Back in the day being on Broadway. I was obsessed with her voice and her being able to hold this note. So the thought that Melba Moore's management company had any deal wanted to do with me at all, I was like, yes. So I signed with them. And then Sister Act 2 opportunity came up, you know, and that was something that we all kind of just auditioned for, not knowing what would happen from that. And I did that and ended up in that movie, put out a record. And right when the record came out, I remember touring with all the big acts, you know, Ashley Simpson, Freddie Jackson, who were also very kind to me. I remember one day and I was just like, I don't want to do it this way. I want to do something different. You know, I like Leontine Price and Kathleen Battle and Tina Turner and Dolly Parton. And I like all these different styles of music, but I was stuck in this box of just doing R&B, you know, that at that time they had the Black Music Division and the A&R Division, and you were a Black artist and you only at your show saw Black faces. But my best friend, one of my best friends, was white. And I'm like, well, why can't I just do music that is just good music, you know? And so at that time, I told my manager that I didn't know what to do. So we went on and we kept touring and doing things like that. And we ended up leaving this particular label. And I signed briefly with Sean Combs at Bad Boy. Mm. And that experience was definitely not what I knew I wanted my career to be. Not that it was a bad experience. I just, I knew I wasn't a hip hop artist. I knew that this wasn't the path for me. But in that process, I learned a lot about the business. And so I left there, you know, they recorded so much music for me. That's where I start writing for Shanice Wilson. And I wrote with Heavy D and a couple, you know, a lot of big name artists at that time. So I left. And this is the funny part. And I decided in the middle of my career that I wanted to go to hair school.
Wow.
Yeah. So people are like, what happened to Tanya Blunt? I was like, you know what? I don't want to do this. I don't want to do it this way. I'm going through some kind of spiritual awakening. I don't know what's happening with me. I'm trying to hear this voice that I'm hearing everybody talk about since I was 7 years old, sitting in the, you know, Baptist pews. So I went to hair school. And I did that for about, I would say, 7 to 8 years. I dibbled and dabbled in music, where I would kind of teach worship teams and stuff like that. But I knew that that wasn't it either. You know, I wasn't just going to be a worship leader. There was more. And I could take the experience from worship, the experience from gospel, the experience from R&B, Christian, my dad from New Bern, North Carolina. I could take that country experience that I had sitting on the front porch with my grandparents, drinking iced tea and playing in the pond, you know, with the frogs and the cows and, you know, the pigs. I could take that country experience. And there was going to be an opportunity where I could one day mesh all this together. And fast forwarding, I met my husband. I heard him perform at this love festival out in Laurel, Maryland. He was incredible. I mean, the lyrics, everything. It just like rushed from the stage to where I was in the middle of the field. And I'm like, who is this guy? Who could be this vulnerable with music? Who could, you know, because that's what I wanted. I wanted to meet someone who would once again ignite not just the fire for music in me, but the fire for life.
Yeah.
Because I had lost my sense of life. And we met, and not right away did we start doing music because my brother was trying to record. So I was working with him at the time doing some stuff. And I asked Michael to write us a couple of songs for a project that we were going to possibly do. So he did that. And my brother didn't make a rehearsal. Michael did some reference vocals to the track. One of my girlfriends heard the song and was like, do you guys hear this? Do you hear what you guys are doing? And we were like, yeah. And we kind of just brushed it off, you know. 6 months later, we get married. We don't sing together for 3 years.
Wow.
So the Warren Treaty didn't happen with music. We just fell in love. It was like every day we're together. We're like, I'm just wanting whatever this energy is that he has, you know, this incredible human being. So we get married and, you know, I find out that he's a wounded warrior, and he starts letting me in on why he writes the songs as fast as he does and as deep as he does. And it clicked. We started singing together. He started letting me into his world. And that was the birth of the Warren Treaty.
Wow.
That was it. And I knew right away when he started writing these songs, I was like, I can do music again because it's honest.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be something that I'm not. I don't have to, you know, put on a mini dress and toss around in some heels and sing songs that I don't really like, you know, just right. to sell a record. I didn't want to do that. And that's what we did. We got in our van with our little baby and we toured the country. Coffee shops, sometimes 2 people would show up. Sometimes 5 people would show up. And I started all over. I started from scratch. And people thought Tanya Blunt was dead. I would read articles about it. And people were like, did you see this? My friends are like, they're saying you're dead. You got to put on the record. I was like, I am. I'm dead to that life.
Mm.
I'm dead to that. And I'm born again in this. So that's my quick spiel of how I got to the Warren Treaty, you know,
oof.
And the spiritual experience that it was, because it was very spiritual getting to this place.
Yeah. I mean, there's two things you said that really hit home to me. The most ignorant part is because, I mean, I can sing enough to like hold a note, but I should really be with others, like in a choir type of situation. I shouldn't be alone singing, you know, but because like, I don't have that gift. I just always imagine people who can like really sing are just like walking around their house all the time singing. So my mind is like, how could these two vocalists like, which is probably why I didn't get the gift, because if I was married to somebody that could sing, like the two of y'all could sing, like if I could sing and he could sing, I feel like I would just be walking around the house and like just singing random words all the time for nothing. So I just can't even imagine that. But I think that's a beautiful part of the story in that the foundations were the love and the relationship and then building the ability to be partners in art and in business. I think it's beautiful that the foundation was you all being in love with each other and walking through life, walking through all of the ups and downs that life is going to bring. The other thing you said that I thought was so important, and I have given this advice when I've done talks with college students that are artists, you know, or performing artists, and they're always like, I'm about to graduate from college, you know, what should I do? And I'm always like, you should get a job. And I feel like it's always like the unsexy advice, because I think they're hoping I'm going to say, you should go on tour right away, or you should make an album. You should do those things too. But even, you know, you telling that story, all of these experiences you had in the industry, and then you coming to that point where you were like, I'm about to go to cosmetology school and I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do that. And yeah. I'm going to just do that for a while. But yeah. like, that's life. Those experiences are where, you know, for me, the poems, they come from. Mm-hmm. They come from the life yeah. that, you know, we live, whatever that looks like. And I'm like, sometimes the best thing you can do for yourself is take a break from some of this and just get you a job.
That is so true. Until you can, because your art form, it's an energy that's like, it surges, it pushes through an atmosphere. So whenever you're putting out art, it's not like a hairstyle where you'll do someone's hair and it's great for that photo. And when they wash it, it goes away. Music never goes away. Like, people can always find this energy that you put into this world. And I'm like, I don't want to put songs that I don't feel good about into the world, you know, or energy into the world. So the best thing I could do is, like you said, is go sit down somewhere until I figured out, what is my energy?
Yeah.
You know, who am I in all of this? Because I started so young. I started record deal at 17, right out of high school, you know?
Wow. It's just amazing to think about. And I hope for any of you all listening that are artists, I think the other thing that you said that really encouraged me is sometimes as an artist, it's challenging to balance finding your own voice and honoring your own creativity while being in the middle of a business as well, and doing what you have to do to take care of your soul, to honor your creative person, even if that goes against what, air quotes, the business says you should be at that point, or you should be doing, or you should be sounding like this or that, when really so much of it is about you coming to sound like yourself, you know, and continuing to become, you know, who you are as you grow and experience different things. I thought that was so powerful. I do have another question, which is somewhat selfish because my husband and I also work together. We have performed together as a duo before. And that was fascinating because we work very differently. I need a lot of like quiet and, you know, jazz and stuff in order to like write my poems. And my husband, as a DJ, as a music producer, like he could watch a cartoon and get inspired from that, or watch a stand-up comedian, or just grab some things and make some noise. So when we tried creating in the same room, we were like, no, we can't do this. We can't do this like in the same room like this. So what has it been like being married to your duo partner also? Because there are people that perform together, but they don't have the other part of their life that they live together. They're not romantic partners. They're not parenting together. So what have been some of the lessons you've learned as you and your husband have navigated that?
There's not a blueprint for us. You know, there are no people like, don't you get sick of each other? And don't you need your space? There's none of that. Like, we wake up and whatever the day is going to give us, we kind of take it. Sometimes Michael will say, hey, look, let's rehearse. And I'll just pretty much say, okay, maybe we can rehearse at this time. So that's the lead in it, because I do more, you know, around the house. For the most part, you know, I'm the person that does most of that when we're home, and we travel with our son. So I homeschool him as well. Mm. So the creative side of it is really more so Michael is the writer. I write very minimum. I'm writing on the new stuff that we're doing, but he'll bring me a batch of songs and he'll say, okay, I'm thinking about us going this way with the Warren Treaty. What do you think? And I'll say, nah, or I'll say, yeah. And then we'll start just crafting what we want to talk about, you know, and we'll have these songs and Michael will bring them to me. And then we kind of just chop them down. If we started with 50, we may end up agreeing on 12 to 14 songs together. But the balance is, there is no balance. It's really hard when I hear people say, you know, we try to balance it. I just don't, there's not one. You know, when I feel like I don't want to record or I don't want to sing today, I'll just say to him, I don't want to do that right now. And he'll say, okay, let's watch a movie. And here you go. We'll watch a series for 2 days, you know, we'll watch a television series or something like that, you know, to break up the monotony of doing music all the time. So that's our balance, you know.
I love that. And I do feel like, you know, for my husband and I being life partners and business partners as well, it is this interesting, I don't know, I wish I need to come up with a better word for it, because I feel like you're right. I feel like balance is not the word that I want to put there, but there's a lot of things that overlap, I guess, in that experience for us, that there are times we are creating, you know, work together. And then there are times we're talking about work, but it's not just talking about business. It's talking about the part of our hearts that, you know, wants to figure out what we feel like we want to create and how that affects us even as people, you know. So to your point, it's definitely not something that's like at 8 p.m. that just turns off and we gonna wait till tomorrow at 7 a.m. to continue that, you know.
Yeah, we don't have a balance. It's really hard to do that. I mean, like now Michael is, you know, recording and doing in the studio. We have a little studio in our home now since the pandemic hit. So, you know, at any moment we can go in there and just start creating, and we rehearse with our band as well here. So, you know, it depends on how I feel. I've learned one thing that the pandemic has taught me, and I've kind of always tried to live this, but I'm now I had to practice it. It's taking day by day, taking every day, every minute, every second for what it is, you know. And if it, if you have a schedule, then great. You, you know, you have a Zoom call or a phone call or a rehearsal or a show. You take that, and but you don't plan your whole life around that. You know what I mean? It, it's something that you have to do for work, but my life isn't work. Mm. You know, there's so many other things that fulfill me throughout the day. And so I've gotten into this thing where I'm like, okay, how can I create this day to be what I want it to be? You know, in spite of all the work that I have to do. And sometimes that's plugging out and just saying, hey, babe, I can't, I don't want to record today, you know? Yeah. And then other days it's like, hey, look, let's do this, you know?
Oh, I love that. I love that you used, brought up that word create and in our everyday life, you know, like what's the day that I want to create today?
Yeah.
Which I think even broadens, you know, a lot of times, obviously, you know, as artists, we think about creativity in that way. But I have a lot of friends who are like, but I'm not an artist. And I'm like, but there's a lot of ways to be a part of creativity that are in our everyday life, you know, even if you're not painting or doing choreography or other things that people think are outwardly, you know, creative. There are ways we can create joy or create space for memories. And, you know, there's different things we can do like that, that also are really important to life. And I do think this time of the pandemic has, you know, obviously the year has been, you know, trash in some ways, but in other ways, I think it has like helped us, you know, a lot of us really focus in on what's important to us and what really matters and sort of like paring that down, which I think, you know, is a good process. Okay, I want to talk about Heartstown. I'm always curious about how albums get made because I am not a musician myself, but I'm a big music fan, you know? So whenever you listen to someone's whole album in particular, you know, and especially when you're listening to that from singers who are also writing this music, I mean, there's something so rich about listening to that. But I'm always like, oh my gosh, how do you even go about making an album? I know, I mean, I'm sure for like singers, songwriters, musicians, it's, I don't know if it's like old hat, but for me, I'm like, as a fan, I'm like, how do you do this? So you talked about earlier that sometimes y'all will have bunches of songs. You might have 40 or 50 songs, and then you're sort of narrowing that down to the album. Like, how does that list of songs become an album like Heartstown?
Well, we have an interesting process. What we used to do before the pandemic hit again, as we were touring. So we did, you know, the year before last, or I guess it was 2018, we, all the songs you hear on Heartstown, we actually toured with those songs. So we would perform them and let our fans tell us which songs they loved. So a song like Five More Minutes on Heartstown, we actually been doing that song for a year. And when the album came out, fans were like, oh my God, we're so happy you released Five More Minutes, as well as us performing Heartstown. So we tested them on our fans to see what they wanted to hear. And not that you make a record based off of what your fans want to hear, but they're the ones that have to buy it, you know?
Right.
And then we started to notice on the road that people would send us a lot of messages, you know, through Facebook and Instagram about their personal lives, because we're so open with, of course, Michael has PTSD and I've suffered from depression before. We both like to eat. So, you know, we're not skinny people, we're weight people. So we talk about our struggles with, you know, weight and PTSD, combat, him being a combat veteran, and us touring with our 9-year-old now, homeschooling. So we took all these different things that we were doing on stage and we were talking about them, and the fans just started talking back to us, you know, so they would text us and or email us or whatever and say, I'm suffering from cancer, you know, your song helped me through my treatment, or I'm going through this with my spouse, can you all give us a call to talk about our marriage? And we just started creating this community of people, you know, whether they were gay, they were straight, they were Democrat, Republican, white, Hispanic, whatever they were, they would call us, you know, and we would respond to them on social media. And we kind of created this family, and we started a group on Facebook called Heartstown. It's a community, probably about 4,000 people now, but it started with nothing. And they're on there encouraging each other now and accepting each other. And when, you know, we talk about the moments with the song, 5 More Minutes, where that was, you know, Michael having a PTSD moment where he wanted to die by suicide. And we talk about that. So you have a community of people who now no longer are living in the stigma of having to hide because they are gay, or having to hide because they may have tried to commit suicide, you know, two or three days ago. They put it up on in Hartstown, and we wrapped these songs around them, and it became the album. So you have songs like 5 More Minutes. You have songs like Lonely in My Grief, which we were doing 2 years ago before even the social justice, Black Lives Matter, actually blew up the way it did. Wow. And we were talking about it because we are in, you know, as African-American artists, it's probably a handful of us that are doing Americana style music. So we had our challenges as African-American artists on the road, you know, going to some of these places where people treated us different, or it would just be one Black act on an entire festival of 100 people. Right. You know what I mean? 100 acts. So we talk about being lonely in our grief, you know, lonely in the process of being Black people and nobody standing up and saying, hey, why aren't there more Black people on festivals, or, you know, in Americana or whatever the case may be. And we did it in love. So we put that song on the record, Hey Pretty Moon. We talk about that. We talk about jealousy, a song, you know, called Jealousy. And these songs kind of just came from an honest place of where we are and where we were over the last 24 months. And that's how the record came about.
Oh, I love that. And just even having experienced some of the songs on Hartstown live, and just how I just, like, rich is the only word I can think of, Tanya, to describe that. But I think what's really beautiful and what's important about the music that the two of you are making is that it does make people feel heard and seen and known, you know, even if they're in the audience and they never may get a chance to get their story to the two of you. But hearing the two of you share those stories and sing those songs, it's making people feel understood. And I think that is the power of music and of writing. It's our hope, those of us that are making art like this, you know, it's our hope that as we're pouring our soul into what we're doing, that that translates for somebody sitting there who may be going through PTSD, but they don't even have the words to describe how that experience is impacting them. And they hear this music and they're like, there's the language. You know, there are the words that I couldn't say. And I also have experienced just a grief that's so heavy, it just takes my speech away almost. And when I hear it come back to me in a song, It's just such a beautiful experience for me to think I was so deep in sadness, I couldn't bring the words to that. But here comes a musician, here comes a singer and a songwriter that can give language to an experience that we know as human beings.
Yeah, yeah, you nailed it. Yeah, and it's really, you know, I really live on this principle that, you know, you can't love a person if you're judging them.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, if they don't feel accepted, if they don't feel like you hear them, you can never really sustain anything, not a relationship, not a fan base. I call it fanship, not a fanship.
Oh,
anything
that
with a ship behind it can't be established unless there's some level of respect, love, and acceptance. And honesty. And that's what we give our fans. You know, we're completely vulnerable with them and transparent, sometimes to maybe our own detriment. But I mean, what more can you give? We give our hearts, we give it all. And there's no, we don't hold back. So.
Oh, yes. Okay. I have some music questions that I want to ask you, Tanya. Maybe you will give the people some things they can add to their different playlists on all the places where you can make a playlist. My first question to you is, what is the first song, or even if it's a couple of songs, what's the first song that you remember learning to sing?
First song I learned was a church song. It was called It's Gonna Rain. And I can't remember who the artist was, but I remember singing that song. The first song I sang, which was like an R&B song publicly, was Anita Baker's No One in the World.
Woo. It's a good choice. It's a good choice right there. Mm, yes. Okay. Now, you may, this may be, it's not a hard question, but I feel like when you are an artist, it's like, how can I pick from all these things? But I know sometimes as a poet, it's not that I can say I love any of my poems more than the other, but I go through seasons of time where there might be one poem that in that time, that's my favorite one to do or to perform. Do you have a favorite The War and Treaty song right now that you're like, that's the one I love to sing?
I'm going to say off of the Heartstown record, Hey Pretty Moon.
It's a beautiful one. Oof, yes.
I love that song.
What is your favorite cover to sing?
Well, not cover. I don't do well with covering songs, but I do. I love listening to anything Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, that kind of music, you know. I never, and I'm a vocalist, so I listen to a lot of singers and how they interpret songs.
Mm.
And I'm like, I can't ever even try to do it that way. But so I don't know. I can't really say that I have one. I can't really say.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, for those of us who are listening that like can't sing, I'm like, what about this? What about this?
Tell me what?
I'll tell you one of mine, which is not a cover, because like I told you, I can't be seen really singing publicly by myself. But the person whose music I sing like it's my concert when I'm by myself is India Ari. She's like my person. Like I'm in the shower, I'm in the car. I'm like, in my mind, I'm hitting all the notes. I'm hitting all the same notes that she's hitting. If somebody else were in the car, they would be like, that's not it. But in my mind, I'm like, me and Indy are in here doing an equal duet. I'm singing just as good as she is.
Okay, so I'm going to say this. I would have to say Mahalia Jackson. Yeah. I'm going way back.
Yeah.
Just the way she just attacks a lyric is insane to me. You know, her interpretation. I would have to say her.
I love it.
Yeah, she gets it. And on the countryside, Patsy Cline,
People
like that, you know, their voices are just crazy. You know, yes. Patsy Cline singing that song is insane.
So good. Okay, this is a follow-up question to that. Do you have a favorite music diva? And I know that I'm leaving that definition to be relative because There's a lot of names that could go there. I mean, that could be Dolly Parton. That could be Chaka Khan. You know, it could be Reba McEntire. There's a lot of divas.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you have a favorite music diva or a couple of them? And if so, who would be some of your like favorite music divas?
I'm going to have to say, of course, the queen herself, Aretha Franklin.
Yes.
The late, great. Patti LaBelle, you know, of course, her voice is, and she's in her 70s and she's still slaying. Of Dolly Parton. Of course. I love Brandi Carlile. You know, she's incredible. Valerie June. These are all newer artists. Like Valerie June, Brandi Carlile, Cyndi Lauper. You know, my girl. Let me think. The list just goes, Dead and Alive. You know, the list goes on and on. Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald. God, I can't even keep going. The list is extensive. You know, Emmy Lou Harris, the list is very long. So
many divas. And it's been interesting to me to think too, I mean, of course, part of this is like, oh, I'm getting older. But it's interesting to me to think like, you know, when I think about, you know, I think about like my mom's generation's music and I'm like, okay, I can look at their generation and be like, okay, here were the divas of that era of music. And then I think about the music I loved when I was, you know, maybe that like high school into my like early to mid 20s. And now, you know, we sort of get to a point when we get in our 30s and 40s that we can then look at the music that we grew up with, the people that were our contemporaries that are going to make that diva canon, which has been like exciting to me to watch, you know, because when you're young and you're listening to Aretha, you're like, oh my gosh, that, I mean, here is this diva of that era, but I wasn't born to get to go to the, you know, show and see her do that in person. Like, there are so many times I'm like, I just wish I could, like, if I could go back in time, I would want to see her live. I would want to see Marvin Gaye. That's like, I mean,
yes.
Do you have artists like that?
Sam and Dave, all those cats, Otis Redding, just be able to experience them, you know, in their prime is insane. I would have just lost all of my mind.
Everything and the fashions. Okay. And let me, I do have one more music question, but I do need to step in here and discuss the fashions, Tanya, because you are also about these vintage fashions. Can you discuss, like, how did you come to, you already described to us how you came to find your voice musically, and you also have come to find this fabulous and gorgeous look. Like, when I look at the fashion of you. So talk about that. What was the process like of you finding sort of this is my style, or how my style is evolving?
Yeah, it evolved from, of course, Anita Baker, Julie Andrews style, short, you know, 1950s pixie cut. And my mother passed away 5 years ago. This will make 5 years this past Thanksgiving. And she was from Panama. My grandmother was a seamstress in Panama. And my mother's friends were seamstresses. And they would get all these expensive clothes from the house that my grandmother and my mom and they lived in. They lived with a rich family in the basement. And my grandmother made clothes for this family in Panama. My grandmother was from Costa Rica, so she would have these, my mother would have this beautiful lace and beautiful fabric growing up. And I remember as a kid, I would always like certain things, and she would never just buy cheap fabric. And if I did come home with something that was cheap, she would say, you don't want to get that because you want to be able to have this in 10 years. And when she passed away, I got a couple of, I willed some of her things, you know, like her sweaters and her purses and some of her jewelry. And I was living in a little town called Albion, Michigan. And this place just happened to be a historic area. And they had a ton of vintage stores. So the home we were living in was from, it was built in the 1900s. Actually, it was built in 1900. And so you had these, this beautiful wood and these beautiful big bay windows and the hardwood floors and all of the, a lot of the artifacts from that era. And it was like something inside of me just exploded when I was there. And I would start going to the, even the thrift stores had this fine fabric that my mother, you know, introduced me to as a young child, and the detail of the clothes, you know, the cape coats and the 1950 swing dresses or the 1970s dresses, where the detail was just so incredible. And I fell in love with the detail. And I was like, this is like, if you watch that movie, Lovecraft Country, where it's like a portal and they jump in and out of the portal. I was like, oh my God, I just jumped into the 1950s. I'm here. And something happened, you know, and I just happened to start dressing like that, and then got involved in a community, a pinup community, where I could find these clothes overseas in like London and Amsterdam and New Zealand, and where it's very popular over there for a lot of the girls to still dress like this. And that was it for me. And I was stuck. I was like, this is it. I want nothing else with my life. I'm stuck. So the turbans and the cape coats and the long opera gloves, things that in that era, you know, from the 40s to even the 60s, people just dressed like that every day. It wasn't like, I didn't see any pictures of my mother or in growing up where my mother wore tennis shoes.
Right.
Maybe when we went to King's Dominion or an amusement park or somewhere, or she went walking with me, but, you know, things that we wear every day now that are common for us, yoga pants, and that was for the gym. That was a specific place for you to wear sweat clothes, you know, and that was so that's what I saw. And I never even saw my mother until she started getting older, you know, maybe 5 years before she passed, wear pants. So I went through my whole life seeing this woman wear dresses that just touched below the knee, you know, but they were fitted dresses. They weren't like, they were the wiggle dresses. They were still sexy dresses, you know. And I fell in love with it. And it's been what I am just attracted to. My soul is just attracted to that energy. And when I see it, I'm like, I got to wear this. I have to put this on, even if I'm the only one walking around looking like I'm in costume.
It's gorgeous. Like, just having seen your style and, of course, following you on Instagram and like seeing all of these amazing styles and all this fashion. I mean, it's gorgeous, Tanya. And and I think that's really, you know, important to, you know, and not all of my listeners are women, but I know for a lot of us who are women, it's, you know, finding fashion can be this other place where you get to find your voice and find, you know, who you are and how you want to express that, you know, through your clothing. And yes, girl, you did that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Last question I want to ask you is, when you need some joy, what are your favorite songs to listen to right now?
Oh, Michael wrote this song called Joy, Don't You Go.
Mm.
And it's like a John Lennon style song. And he's actually, not even because he's my husband. I'll tell you a story. When I first met him, he had this CD called Shift. And I bought 6 CDs. It was like a Christian rock kind of thing. And I bought 6 CDs. And I played that record to death. People were stealing it from me. I bought so many. They were like, we're taking it because we're sick of hearing it. But he's my favorite songwriter, you know. And I think it's because of how far in he'll allow himself to write. So this is that song, Joy, Don't You Go. Anything by Mahalia Jackson, when I want to feel closer to the universe, when I want to feel, you know, get my soul into that place. There's a song called Oceans. I can't remember. I think it's a Hillsong song.
Mm.
And it's one of my favorites when I want to feel close to who I am and what my purpose is. I listen to that song as well. You know? Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Y'all, thank you to Tanya Trotter for coming on here, inspiring us, telling us your story, Tanya, getting to hear some of the music that you love, getting to hear how you make the music that we love as well. Tanya, thank you so much for joining me. I will definitely be letting everyone know how they can follow, but you can listen to Heartstown. I'm going to tell y'all that right now. You can listen to Heartstown wherever you listen to music. Go to there and listen to it. And I heard a rumor, Heartstown be on vinyl too for the people that, you know, want to be involved in that. It's a lot of things you can be doing, but just go to there and listen to Heartstown. Tanya, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me and just being the beautiful light that you are. Love you to death and life.
Thanks again to Tanya Trotter from The War and Treaty. And I'm not playing. Y'all need to go and listen to that music. You can check out their website, thewarandtreaty.com. You can listen to their newest album, Heartstown, wherever you like to stream your music. You can follow them at The War and Treaty on Instagram. And you can follow Tanya at she_loves_vintage on Instagram. And of course, don't forget, you don't have to remember all this in case you're driving or otherwise indisposed. All of this information will be on the show notes at aminabrown.com/her with Amina. You can find notes, links to the different things that I talk to guests about. So make sure you check that out. And I hope you're following me already. But if you're not, follow me at Amina B-E-E, at Amina B on Instagram. I would love to connect with you. I would love to engage with you, hear your thoughts about these episodes. You can also find on my Instagram, there are some different clips and questions there following up on some of the content we're talking about on the podcast. So I'd love to engage with you there. This week's Give Her a Crown is a shout out to Mara Leidy and Naomi Hirabayashi, co-founders and co-CEOs of Shine, an award-winning self-care app and community for people with anxiety and depression. I use Shine myself, and let me tell you, to know that there is an app like this with meditation and sleep stories and so much more, founded by two women of color, and hearing the voices of women of color as I meditate or take some time to calm my mind while using the app means the world. If you are looking for an app that centers women of color and encourages self-care, I highly recommend the Shine app. Mara and Naomi, thank you for paving the way for women of color in startups and for encouraging conversation around mental health and self-care. Mara and Naomi, give them a crown. Her with Amina Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions. As a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.